Talking about motivation this morning on Voices of Diversity with my co-host Jo McKibben and sharing our thoughts on what motivates us this morning, Sunday morning, the beginning of a new week. And maybe you woke up this morning thinking, oh God, it's only Sunday, I've got a lot to do this week. Well, let's get rid of the Sunday-itis. Let's get positive. Let's get motivated. And it's a real pleasure to welcome our guest this morning. That's Chantal Burns. She's a best-selling author and international coach, speaker and state-of-mind performance expert. She's got over 26 years of experience with her early career in sales and media, including the BBC and Time Warner. But she's here with us here in the UAE to share her thoughts and her book, Instant Motivation, The Surprising Truth Behind What Really Drives Top Performance. Good morning to you, Chantal.
Good morning.
Welcome to the UAE.
Thank you so much.
Well, it's a real pleasure to meet you. And you bought the book in for me, which is all the more better. Thank you very much for that. Instant motivation. Do we need to read a book to be motivated?
That's such a great question. Obviously, I want to say yes, because there's no point in slaving over that book for 2 years to say, nah, don't need to read it, it's fine. But I mean, in some ways, it's a great question, because in some ways, no, because everything that I'm saying in the book is common sense. But unfortunately, common sense is a little uncommon for most of us.
And it's interesting, isn't it, how we sometimes get a bit stuck and a little bit, and we maybe know the answers within us, but we need that help. And it does help to inspire us, to motivate us. So whether that's through reading an inspirational quote or listening to Jerry Maguire, watching the movie, or reading a book like this, it's to give us ideas and to maybe point us in the right direction.
Definitely to point us in the right direction. What I'm not doing in the book and in my work is giving people strategies and techniques and tactics, because actually there's plenty of that already. And this might be a little bit controversial based on what the conversation so far this morning, but if those worked, we wouldn't need more and more books. So what happens is someone buys the next motivational self-help book, and then, you know, some of it works for a while, and you try a few of the, you know, motivational, whatever it is, you know, you try a new tactic, or you, someone gives you a great idea that works for them, and you try it, and it kind of works for you for a while, or it doesn't work at all, and then the next book comes out, and it's like, okay, this is the real deal, and that's why many of us have bookshelves full of how to be happy, fulfilled, and motivated, and then we keep buying the next one. So there's something missing. You know, this was the inspiration and the calling for this, for the research I did in the book, because there's something missing for people in regard to happiness, fulfillment, success, performance at work. And I really wanted to shed light on that missing piece.
Well, just chapter one, the motivation myth, why performance is misunderstood. So just unpack that a little bit for us.
Well, it's interesting. One of the things I did with my research was I went out and interviewed a lot of senior leaders in organisations. You know, these are people who are already successful, so they've got a track record, so they must know something, right? They must know something about success and performance, because they're already kind of in the higher echelons of the business world. And one of the questions I asked was, how important is your state of mind in terms of your performance at work and in life generally? And you probably wouldn't be surprised that a high percentage of people and a high percentage of leaders said, yes, it's crucial. My state of mind is really, really important. So most people have a recognition and a realization that that's important. What's really interesting is that when you ask people about what causes their ups and downs in terms of their performance at work, and I ask that in lots of different ways. You know, what constitutes a great day at work? What constitutes a bad day at work? What's the cause, was what I was really asking. And what's fascinating is state of mind slips to the bottom of the list. So as soon as we ask ourselves, what causes a great day at work? What is responsible for my performance at work? Suddenly, my own thinking, my mindset or state of mind, which are all different ways of saying the same thing, which is how I think, slips to the bottom of the list. And what I'm saying in my book and in my work is it should be at the top of the list. In fact, in a way, you could say it should be the only thing on the list. How we think and what we think is responsible for our entire experience of our work, of our performance. And that's really, and the misunderstanding is that people think it's very low down, and that it's that how they think is a result of all of these other things rather than the cause. And I'm turning the cause effect model upside down, basically.
So is it other people influencing the way you think? You think I should be thinking, I should be doing what they're telling me to do, so I'm going to switch off my way of thinking and do as I'm told?
Sometimes. The idea that what someone else is thinking can influence what you think is a little bit of a misnomer. It's not really true. You know, I can only think what I think, and you can only think what you think. And actually, the idea that that you're thinking can somehow determine mine is part of the misunderstanding.
Because it makes me wonder what was at the top of people's lists, and was it that, and I'm assuming here, and you'll tell me if I'm wrong, but was at the top of their list of what's affecting whether they're having a good day or not is what other people were doing. So, you know, I didn't have a good day because somebody let me down, or I, you know, it wasn't as good as it could have been because that person wasn't doing what I hoped they would do for me. I don't know. Is that the kind of thing?
Yeah. I mean, the main things at the top of the list were workload, the amount of work, pressure of deadlines, my boss, or, you know, poor leadership, other people's behaviour, the weather, my journey into work. I mean, things like that. And I understand why people choose those things, because that's how it looks like they are the reasons for why we think and feel the way that we do. But the reality is it doesn't work that way. And we know that because some days a huge workload can feel like a mountain that we can't even think about climbing. And on other days, that same workload seems perfectly doable. So, you know, we have to ask ourselves, what accounts for the fact that the same set of circumstances, for example, can seem awful on one day and seem perfectly okay and manageable on another day? Or why is it that my partner is really irritating, you know, at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and 2 hours later he's behaving the same way or telling the same jokes or saying the same thing, and I'm having a completely different response to that? It's not my partner that's doing it, but it looks like it is, and it's quite annoying to not be able to blame him anymore, but hey.
Well, you know, I can see your point, and I can understand that to a point, but then if we're always finding ways to be in the best place and have the best state of mind and have the best attitude, doesn't that just leave us open to more and more things being laid on top of us? You know, at some point you have to say, yes, that is too much workload, or that is too that isn't working well for me. So how does that tie in to making the right decisions?
Yeah, again, that's a really great point. It's what I'm not saying is that there aren't challenging situations and circumstances, because there absolutely are. Some people are dealing with, you know, I went out to Japan soon after the tsunami, and I was faced with people that had experienced extraordinary difficulties, and people working in the disaster areas. And what I wasn't saying is, you know, this is all in your mind, it's just in your thinking. You know, there are things that are happening, but our capacity and our capability of dealing with these situations with real clarity and real perspective and real presence of mind, that's what I'm talking about. And if we understand where our experience and our feelings are really coming from, which is the crux of the book, then we are less likely to innocently and mistakenly blame these things for our feelings. And when we're not blaming circumstances for how we feel, it sort of empowers us, it gives us our control back in our experience, if you like. And from that place, with more clarity of mind, we can better deal with those situations. So the manager who's kind of experiencing burnout, as soon as he starts to, and this is what I see with my clients over and over again, as soon as that person starts to understand where that feeling of burnout is really coming from and stops blaming all of these external factors because it feels like they are the things that are overwhelming him, as soon as that person puts their experience back in its rightful place, if you like, and has the kind of experience equation working properly, it settles them down, and then they're able to see what they need to do with that workload. And it might be that the workload is unmanageable, but their ability to be able to have the right conversations, make the right choices and decisions about that, is down to their own clarity of mind. And I'm all about helping people have more presence of mind by understanding how their minds work.
Jo McKibb and I in conversation, getting motivation from Chantal Burns, who's a best-selling author. She's an international coach and speaker, and really looking at our state of mind and the way we think. Best-selling book, Instant Motivation. It's the surprising truth behind what really drives top performance. And it's in the WH Smith recommended non-fiction book of the month. And it also provides an understanding of how state of mind affects our performance and why. So great to have you with us here in the UAE, Chantal. And but to know a bit more about you and how you got into the business of coaching, how did you become an international coach?
Well, I was working in business for many, many years. And so as part of my working corporate life, I was leading in coaching teams and mentoring. It was just a natural part of being a leader and being a manager in the corporate world. When I set up my company in 1999-2000, it was a natural progression. That was a natural place for me to go, which was to mentor and coach and teach people what I'd learnt, you know, my time in business. So it was just a very organic process, really, as well as, you know, some skills development and, you know, some training and all the kind of good stuff that you do.
And with the book, I mean, for this, I mean, you've obviously worked with a lot of companies and, as you said, leaders and maybe high upper management. Who's this book for? Who would benefit from this book?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's being read by people in from all walks of life and all different types of all levels in organisations. So I'm getting messages from people who are, you know, at CEO level who love it. You know, it's been reviewed by a lot of people at manuscript stage as well at all levels. And it seems to speak to everyone in one way or another, regardless of, you know, the kind of work they do. It just seems to speak to everyone. I think it's just an important subject for human beings.
Earlier, you were talking about workload, and again, this across, you know, it could be work in your professional workplace or at home or getting through a workload. And one day, you can say, let's say on a Monday and a Tuesday, you've got exactly the same amount of workload. It's a lot, you're busy, but you make your way through it. On the Monday, you do it brilliantly, you know, guns are blazing, you achieve. And the next day, you've got the same workload, but you are struggling with it. Why does that happen?
It's so interesting. I think the thing that we learn from quite a young age, actually, and it gets reinforced over and over again, is that how life looks, whether it's the workload, whether it's, you know, our family, you know, our partner, our children, life in general, that how life occurs to us and how life shows up or how we feel is a function of what's going on around us. And the reality is that how life occurs to us in all of those different contexts is actually a function of our own state of mind in any given moment. So you've probably experienced this, you know, if you're feeling a bit flat or you're feeling a bit blue or whatever, you look out and the world kind of looks, it reflects how we feel. The world reflects how we feel. And when we're feeling upbeat and we look out at the world, you know, it looks gorgeous. I always say this to people, isn't it funny that when you're in a nice feeling, the world just seems kind and brilliant, and you see all the good things in life. You see all the, you know, people seem funny, and, you know, the green seems greener, you know, the blue sky seems bluer. And when you're not feeling great, the world can seem, you know, very different. So it's always a function, like how we feel about life is a function of how we're thinking about life. So, you know, every moment by moment, every feeling that we're experiencing is just coming from directly from our thinking in the moment. Comes directly from our thinking in the moment. It's very powerful for people to learn this. It seems so simple, almost throwaway simple, and yet it's one of the most profound things that I've ever learned. And I see with my clients the difference it makes when they start to understand that the cause-effect model of life that they've been living in, which is outside is causing the inside, is not how it works. It's inside is causing inside. And suddenly you feel really empowered by that truth, and then you start to see that truth showing up everywhere, and you start to see how everybody is living in this, well, how a lot of people are living in a kind of a false understanding about how life works. And that creates a lot of the problems, especially in the workplace. Blame cultures are a great example. You know, people talk about the blame culture. We've got a blame culture. We've got to change it. And a blame culture is an example of people not understanding where their feelings are coming from and blaming it on this person, this structure of the organisation, the lack of this and the whatever is going on. As soon as we see that it doesn't work like that, your feelings are coming from your thinking right now, it settles you down and you're able to see that situation in a truer light, and then you're more likely to know what to do.
And what advice do you give to people? How do you coach people to recognise that and take control of it? What's your key message?
It's a conversation a little bit like this. You know, it's I think that we all know the truth of this deep down. We're born knowing this. I think, you know, you look at children and how they interact with each other, and something bothers them one minute and it's gone the next. You know, they have a different thought and bang, the feeling's changed and suddenly everything looks bright and lovely. And I think we know this already. And so I'm always interested in drawing out that truth from people, helping people see that they actually already know this. And I think that's just very helpful. So it's a conversation.
Well, let's have a conversation with one of our listeners now. We've got Luca on the line. Good morning to you, Luca.
Hello, Luca.
Hi, Luca. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hey, good morning, Luca. You're live on air. Thank you for contacting us this morning. What did you want to say? What did you want to share with Chantal this morning?
Oh, well, I understand the daily motivation is the main subject of today, and I personally, I have married a psychologist, so I have a chance of practicing myself nearly every day.
Excellent.
In good or bad. What I've learned is that very often our emotional part plays a very big role in our reactions, even in front of the daily motivations at work. What I learned from my humble experience is that I care more about the process, how I work, not being bothered too much about the long-term results, because I've learned that probably if you do the things the right way, the results will eventually come. If you share your guidelines with your bosses, with the owners, with your colleagues, with your friends, etc., etc. So, I have probably understood that to think about very, very long-term process, long-term targets, takes your focus off your daily, pleasures and off your daily wins.
Okay.
Because at the end of the day, we don't know what's going on in a year or two. So I'd rather focus on my daily experience. That's my point of view.
Well, let's hear what Chantal has to say. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, I think that's just a lovely example of how, for Luca, and I think it's the same for all of us, how his own wisdom and common sense is guiding him. So, you know, that's what makes sense for him. And so we're all going to have our own way of expressing our desires and our aspirations, and we're all going to have our own way of motivating ourselves. That's why one person's motivational strategy doesn't work for another person, because ultimately the best motivational strategies come from our own insights and our own intuitions. You know,
and yet some people are maybe more insightful or in tune with themselves than others, more aware. And clearly Luca has spent a lot of time working on himself and being in tune with what he thinks and how he thinks and how he feels.
Yeah, I certainly think that the more understanding we have about the thought-feeling connection, the relationship between our thinking and our emotions. When I say feelings, I mean emotions, same thing. I think the more we understand that relationship, the more our mind can be freed up, and then we're able to really get connected and aligned with what's really important to us and that deeper sense of purpose.
Do you think that comes with age, though? You know, maturity and understanding your emotions and being able to take something on the chin, or you know, do you think that comes with age?
Well, I used to, but I spend a lot of time talking with younger people. I sat in Dubai this week. I had a beautiful conversation with a 21-year-old who I said was, you know, a wise old soul. She had a deep understanding of her own experience, and she's an example of somebody who hasn't necessarily got a huge amount of life experience, but she's very, very wise. So I don't think age has anything to do with it.
Luca, have you always thought this way? I mean, you said you're married to a psychologist. So, where's your wisdom come from, do you think?
Sorry, can you repeat the question, please? Sorry, didn't get it.
Well, I'll tell you what, you stay where you are. When we come back, we'll pick up the conversation. Let's stay where you are. My co-host this morning is Jo McKibben, and we are getting motivated with a best-selling author that is Chantal Burns. She's also an international coach, speaker, and state-of-mind performance expert. With over 26 years of experience, having worked in the corporate world, in sales and media, but really working now with clients, with companies when it comes to leadership and in leading the best life that you can. And saying it's all about the way we think. And we've also got on the line Luca, a listener. Good morning to you, Luca.
Good morning to you again.
And we were saying just then, before the news, Luca, what, you know, have you always felt the way that you felt? Have you always thought the way that you thought when it comes to, you know, not worrying about the future too much, as in, you know, planning a year ahead, but actually focusing on the here and now more? You said that you're married to a psychologist and she's inspired you. But, you know, where do you get your wisdom from? And have you always thought the way that you do?
Surely I wasn't that rational when I was younger. I'm 43 now. Surely my emotional part was much stronger, and it was making most of the decisions that I was making at the time. I feel that I can control my ego now a little bit more, and I can think for the good of myself and my family and my friends. And obviously the wins and the losses of myself and the others, of my family and my friends and my colleagues, are a daily lesson, which is quite clear and evident. So, you know, like small pieces of a puzzle going together, so that allows me to see the bigger picture.
So again, you know, you're kind of very thoughtful and attuned by the way you think and the choices you make and the reasons you do what you do. You've got a chapter in your book, Chantal, regarding emotion and talking about how the logic of emotion and why control is not the answer, which I find very interesting, particularly as I went to see the film yesterday, The Second Best Exotic Marigold Hotel. And they actually talk about this idea of actually, you know, there they are in their twilight years. They're kind of in their late 70s, early 80s, the characters in this film, living in India, made this lifestyle choice. But talk about how let emotion go and let fear go, and don't try and control everything, but actually let your live your life and let life happen to you a little bit. What are your thoughts on that?
For me, one of the most powerful things that I've learned and that continues to help me and to help the people that I'm sort of serving is to understand that our emotions, or our feelings, if you like, have a very important role in the human operating system. You know, it's really interesting. When I ask people about what do you think about the relationship between your thoughts and your feelings, you tend to find that people think that, you know, thought is one thing and feelings are another, like they're just separate. But they're not separate. They're the same thing. Our feelings are like a felt expression of our thinking. You can't think something without then getting the feeling that comes from that thought. It happens instantaneously. We don't always recognize it. Sometimes we're very aware of the feelings that we have, but we don't know what the thoughts are that created it. And other times we're very aware of what we're thinking, and we sort of don't realize that the feelings that we're in are coming from that. So really learning more about that relationship is so crucial. So when I talk in that chapter about the logic of emotion, what I'm really saying is that when we understand the role that our emotions, our feelings are playing in the system, in this beautiful, intelligent system that we inhabit, it's very, very helpful for us, you know, to really understand that our feelings are part of an important feedback system, and they're telling us something. But they're not telling us something about the outside. They're telling us something about the inside. And that's a game changer.
Luca, thank you for your time today and joining in the conversation and engaging with the topic. It's been great to hear your voice. So have a great day. Thank you, Luca.
You too. Thank you very much. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Bye. Chantal, you were saying that your feelings are different. We think our feelings are our feelings think us. But how do you separate? How do you join those? How do you recognise that? Because I personally don't think that you can control your feelings. If you know, or can, you're saying that you can. How do you recognise that? How do you control that?
Okay, so you just use two really important words, one being control and the other being recognize. So I'm saying you don't need to control, but you do need to understand or recognize what's happening and, you know, what's going on in the system that we're living in, you know, this thought-feeling system. I talk about the fact that human beings are living in a thought-feeling system, really. And it's understanding that really helps us, not trying to control it. Trying to control it is what everyone else is telling us to do. That's what all of the other books are about, how to manage your mind and manage your thinking and be in a better state of mind. And with all the best will in the world, that I don't know if this has been your experience, but certainly my experience and my client's experience, that requires a lot of effort. All of that managing of our thinking and of managing of our feelings is effortful, and we end up doing more thinking, and we need to be doing less thinking, not more thinking. Understanding how the system works, the beautiful thing about that, the implication of understanding the thought-feeling system and the principles behind state of mind that are governing our experience actually reduces the amount of thinking that we're doing, leaves us with a clearer, freer mind, because a lot of that thinking that fills our mind is based on the misunderstanding about where our feelings are coming from. If I think you are responsible for me being upset, let's say we work together, I'm going to have a lot of judgmental, concerned, annoyed or frustrated or upset thinking. And I think it's about you, and I think I've got to change you, or I've got to control this relationship or somehow manage that. If I understand that's not where my upset feelings are coming from, they're not coming from you, they're coming from my thinking in the moment about the situation that I'm in, that changes the dynamic completely. If I'm not blaming you, my mind is freer and clearer, and I can see you and your behavior with more compassion, with more connection, because I see, oh, we're two human beings, you're in your thinking, I'm in mine, you're feeling your thinking, I'm feeling my thinking. That's what's really going on here.
Mm.
And suddenly it's a very different way to operate in relationship with another person.
It's fascinating, because I also think that whilst you get, if you're able to get to that place and you freed up your mind, bang, there's something else to just go and fill it up again with, you know, whether, you know, you're using technology or whether it's the people you're working with. And because you're freer and you seem more relaxed, then somehow you get more, given more to do. So we're always become almost a victim of your own success at that, or your own position of that. So again, it's about checking back in again and making sure that you keep your place, your space as best you can. You know, if you've identified how well you work, or best you tick, it's always about protecting that for yourself, I guess.
Well, yes, and I think that's where wisdom and common sense comes in. You know, we're part of an intelligent system. Human beings are innately intelligent. You know, the philosophers of the ages have been talking about that we're born with an innate intelligence. I'm not talking about the intellectual intelligence, the stuff that we learn. I'm talking about something deeper than that, a deeper level of consciousness that we have. And I think that we sometimes forget that we have this wisdom, this common sense that we can draw on. And, you know, what I think being the operative word, is that when our minds are freer and clearer, we can see the right way to go. You know, it's interesting, in my research, one of the parts of the research was about decision making. There's a whole chapter about this. And in the research, I asked a lot of, you know, there were over 600 people that responded to these questions, and more than that, nearly 1,000 people. And one of the questions I asked was, you know, how often do you know the right thing to do? You know, you have a gut instinct or a sense about something, and you know the right thing to do, but you override it. And a huge proportion of people agreed that often they absolutely know the right thing to do, but for various reasons, they override their own wisdom and common sense. And when I asked them what the reasons for that, it would be things like other people, you know, feeling overpowered by other people, or not feeling like they've got the empowerment to make the decision. But the important thing is that often people know the right thing to do. They have an intuitive sense. It's a mysterious thing. We don't really understand it, but we know when we know. When we know it, we know it.
But you have to have a strength of conviction to stand by that, don't you? Because presumably there'll be consequences. You can stand by your decision and say, no, my instinct is telling me this is the right thing to do. But if I stand by my instinct, I could lose my job.
Yeah, I mean, many leaders have said to me that there have been many times when they've known the decision that needed to be made, and then because they felt insecure about making that decision, they went a different way and later on realize that they should have stuck with their guns. So what happens is you have to, as you know, in the work environment anyway, you have to back that intuition or that gut feeling up with something that seems rational, you know, which is what people do. They'll find facts and things to corroborate the feeling that they had in the beginning, which I think is sensible. You know, we need to be sensible. We're living in a world where some of our decisions and choices can have very important consequences. If you're a social worker working in child protection, which a lot of my clients are, you know, the decisions and choices they're making, you know, there's lives at stake.
Well, Faisal says that research shows that there are two sources of motivation, intrinsic and extrinsic. Money is intrinsic factor, whereas engagement in a job is an extra factor. So it could be an extrinsic factor. So that's Faisal's theory. Again, it's all about exploring and thinking and being in touch with what motivates you and how you respond well in certain situations. Some people would say that, and certainly in the modern world we're living in, that stress has become something that influences and has affected people. And we talk about stress a lot. And interestingly, you've contributed, you and your company, Star Consultancy, have contributed to many different articles. There's one here in the Irish Times, understanding how we think can help us to be more fulfilled. But also here, contributing to CIPD.co.uk on people management. Chronic stress dominates a third of UK working life, says research. And you did the research. Talk us through what you found.
Yeah, well, in terms of stress and well-being, you know, the research showed very stark statistics about the amount of time that the average worker at any level, whether they're a leader or a more junior sort of member of staff in an organisation, the amount of time they spend in a typical day feeling worried, stressed or anxious. And, you know, the numbers are quite extraordinary. And again, there's a logic, there's a reason why the numbers are so high. If we look at all the traditional stress industry websites and texts out there, we're constantly being told that life is innately stressful. You know, that one of the things that's cited over and over again is that moving house is one of the most stressful things a person can do. And we're constantly being given messages that all of these situations that we're in are stressful, but it's not true. It doesn't work like that, and it's very misleading. Stress is an experience of thought. It's an experience of thought and perception. That's why one person's stress is another person's excitement or challenge. You know, one person says this is really inspiring and invigorating, and the colleague who's sitting, you know, down the corridor is feeling crushed and derailed by the exact same thing that the other person finds inspiring. It's never the externals. It just looks like it is, and that's our undoing. That's why we have to understand more about the nature of stress, the nature of motivation. That's where the juice is.
Well, we put up Chantal's website on our website. So if you go to the Dubai Today page, it's all there for you to connect with Chantal. Also via our Facebook page as well, you can connect with Chantal there and on Twitter at Chantal Burns. But there's still time to connect with her here through the show on 4001. And in amongst all that you're talking about stress, one of the things that came up in this article is worryingly 29% of workers know at least two people who have been or are taking antidepressants. This is coming from your research out of the UK. So when we come back, I want to hear from you, Chantal, about what, I know we're not to look too much into the future, but actually what would you like to see changing? How would you like to see implementation of the way we think and feel to make a difference? So stay with us. Oh, it's got a lot of juices going this morning in the way that we think. We're talking to Chantal Burns, who's an international coach. She's also the author of the book Instant Motivation, The Surprising Truth Behind What Really Drives Top Performance. And let me share this with you from Faddy. He's just texting to say, "Hi, Suzanne. I always wondered why Dubai Eye didn't cover such an important topic, but here you are. I think this subject is going to make a revolutionary change in the entire world. The key factor is changing our beliefs system of which everything and anything becomes possible." He goes on to say people like Wayne Dyer, Jack Canfield, Greg Braden are best to give examples and the right insights on that. He says our subconscious minds have power way beyond what our conscious minds could ever believe. I've personally experienced the change and have lots to talk through and about. So thank you, Faddy. But your thoughts, you know, along what you're talking about, Chantal, and we were just saying there, where do we go with this? How do you see the future in the way that we can actually implement our state of mind as a kind of common course of the way we lead our lives?
Well, I think it starts with, you know, it's an individual thing. You know, if we each understand more about the very universal, constant way in which the mind works. You know, this isn't, what I'm talking about is not personal to any one of us. It's about how the system works. It's about how thought really works. And the more that each of us understands that, the more clarity, the more well-being, the more peace of mind and freedom of mind we can live in, which means we make better decisions, we have more perspective. And if you then multiply that or look at what that means across a team or across a department or across a whole organisation, you're talking about very healthy, high-functioning organisations. And if you look at that on a societal level, I mean, a lot of the problems in society are based on the fact that people don't understand where their experience is coming from. And it makes people fearful and scared, and it causes people to blame and attribute their experience to something that's sort of outside of their own mind, if you like. And I think if you went to even to the to the degree of wars and some of the really sort of difficult and quite awful things that are happening in the world, if you trace it back to where it's coming from, it's again a misunderstanding about the mind. So there's something about raising the level of consciousness in the world, and that starts by raising the level of consciousness in our individual lives and within our families, within our friendships, within our workplaces. And then that has an incredible effect in the wider communities in which we're living in. And that's my vision. You know, that's the reason why I was inspired to do this research and write this book, is, you know, the bigger picture of how this can really impact society.
And it's not just about being positive. It's not just about saying, I'm going to be positive, I'm going to think positive, and I'm going to do this. It's about understanding how you're thinking. And, it's not saying, I'm going to be positive, because then if you're not positive and you're not feeling positive, then you feel bad about that.
Yeah. So, and why you're thinking the way you think.
Yes, I mean, someone can be feeling very positive and can be utterly deluded. Someone can be feeling happy and not be seeing with clarity at all. You know, I could have a couple of drinks, or I could, you know, whatever, I could, and I could feel very jolly and very happy, but I wouldn't legally at home in the UK, and I'm sure here as well, I wouldn't be allowed to get into a car and drive. I would not be deemed to have clarity of mind because I'm drinking, but I could feel really positive and happy. You know, there's a difference between clarity and freedom of mind, perspective, and positive feelings. We're, as human beings, we're very good at justifying how we feel. We're very good at justifying our thinking. So it's got to go deeper than that. We have to understand the foundation of how the mind works and thought, the nature of thought itself. It's not about positive or negative feelings. That's misleading.
So what advice would you give people? How do you start this process, apart from buying your book and reading your book, of course?
And also, it's a good question, Joe, because science just texts in. It's putting you on the spot a little bit, but saying, I'm driving to an interview at the moment, listening to this, and I'm feeling a bit stressed and a bit nervous. Any suggestions? What do you think I should do?
Nothing. You should do absolutely nothing. The most helpful thing that I can give you right now as you're driving to this interview is to know that the feelings that you're experiencing have got nothing to do with the interview. Nothing whatsoever. You're just experiencing some temporary thoughts that are moving through your system right now. It's just energy moving through you, and you're experiencing that as a feeling. Now, if you take that thinking and feeling seriously, and you think that is saying something about the interview or something about you, it's going to give you more to think about. But as soon as you realize that these feelings are just a sensory experience that you're having from your own thinking, then there's nothing to fear. Then there's nothing to fear. It's just, you're going into a situation, you'll do the best you can do, and that's all there is. So you don't want to do anything with it. Nothing at all.
Well, I'm looking forward to reading the book. I'm just flicking through some of the chapters here, and one of them, well, towards the end of the book, you're talking about bouncing back. Keep bouncing back. Be a better surfer. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think that sometimes we try to learn to control the waves. You know, it's the control thing again. Manage our thinking, manage our state of mind, manage other people, manage the experience. And that's like trying to control the waves. You can't. The nature of life is there are going to be waves and some are going to be bigger than others. Understanding how thought works and learning about where our experience and our feelings are coming from allows us to be more gracious when the waves are bigger and rougher, allows us to ride the waves more easily. And that's all we can hope for, is just to be, I want to be a better surfer. I've given up trying to control the waves because that just creates more waves.
It's a lovely analogy. And to find out more about Chantal's work, to connect with her, we've posted up her website on the Dubai Today page at dubaieye1038.com, and it's also linked into our Facebook page as well. You can connect via Twitter at Chantal Burns, is that right? And yeah, lots of people wanting to know more, so do check out our website and get all the information. So the book is out, it's doing incredibly well, it's up there on the best book, is it, with W.H. Smith's?
Yes, it's in the charts, it's in the bestseller charts, which is fantastic.
Fantastic indeed. It's been a real pleasure talking with you. So what's next, Chantal, for you?
Well, just getting the message out more and more, and this, you know, the conversations like this are really what I want to be doing, just helping people to get more in touch with their own well-being, their own wisdom, their own insight, so that we can make the world a better place, which sounds like a Miss World speech, but that really is what it's, what else is it about? Yeah. If it's not about that.
Oh, fantastic. Well, thank you very much for your time today, and enjoy the rest of your time here in Dubai in the UAE, and safe travels back to the UK.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's been lovely. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And it's great to be back with you on the show. Big thank you to Jo McKibben.
Thank you. I feel very motivated and inspired now, and I'm going to stop thinking altogether.
I think you should head straight to the kitchen and get cooking up a storm with all the messages that people have been texting in this morning, with the food that motivates them, that up for grabs again tomorrow. That's it from me. Have yourselves a great day.